with the topic of somebody who inflicts damage on a item which draws its value primarily because it has sentimental value to the owner. So he's quite upset about it, even though it's not something which, if you were to sell it in the open market, would have drawn too much interest. So the truth is, this is really a broader category, and you know, it plugs into that framework that we've spoken about in the past few days. It's kind of the other side of the insurance question and some of the questions we've talked about in the past few days. Right, so as we've mentioned, just to quickly recap, there are four variables in an act of hezek. The action of hezek, the maisa hezek, which might not be there, and that's called a grumma, if there is a damage that comes without an action.
In our case, it's sentimental value.
No, I'm just giving you, just to review the how the variables. There is the item being physically damaged, and when that part is not there, then that's called a hezek she'eino nikar. The owner suffering a financial loss, and that might not be there because maybe it's covered by insurance or some other ripple effect has increased the value. And that's what we've been talking about the past few days. And the last variable is that, separate from the owner suffering a financial loss, the item itself changed value. The item itself was lowered in value. So there are a couple of scenarios which may fall under that variable. Right? It's not just what we mentioned, but there could be a couple. What kind of scenarios could you have where there is a cost to the owner, but it's not really that the value went down because there wasn't so much actual value in the first place?
Oh, Sam? The glasses example.
Okay, so what about glasses? Okay, so let's think about that for a second. So on the one hand, you have something like prescription glasses. If I'm mazik your prescription glasses, that's going to set you back. But the item did not lose value because it didn't start off with a lot of value. Somebody is not going to have much success selling his prescription glasses on the market. So the value was low to begin with. And the main impact is really to the owner individually, who's going to have to spend a lot to get new ones. So that's one case. Where else could you find in this category? Well, we could also put this case, right, where let's say I mazik something that has sentimental value, an old picture, your Yeshiva University diploma.
Where would that fall into four variables?
So this would seem to also be in the fourth variable, right? Because I can't sell these pictures on the open market. No one's going to pay for them. But to me, it's a loss. Are there any other kinds of things you can put in this box? I mean, there are other examples, probably, let's say, things that, similar to the prescription glasses, items that I'll just have a hard time selling because once they're used, they become harder to sell. So it's not necessarily that they're not originally of value, but my usage of them made them worth less to anyone else. But it's still going to be expensive for me to replace. Well, the damage being caused is that now it's gone. Let's say there's some item which, when it was new, anyone would have been interested in it. But once I've used it, so it's going to be hard for me to sell it to anyone else, the kind of thing that doesn't sell when it's used. But to me, it's still worth its original purchase price, because if I lose it, I'm going to have to replace it. So that gives us three examples. Let's say three examples of a scenario where we've tweaked this fourth variable. Either it's an item that is so personalized to me, it's not worth much on the market, but it's going to cost me to replace. Or an item that's not worth much on the market because no one else wants my stuff that I've used, but I don't care that I'm the one who used it. But again, for me to get a new one is going to cost me money. Or let's say something that's of sentimental value. So are there differences between these cases? Okay, so expand on that.
If you buy the glasses and buy the used object, there's that concern that I have to, even though someone's not going to pay the value of it that I paid, I still have to pay the value to get a new one. I still have to pay the replacement value.
Okay.
There's no replacement value by some fiction.
Okay, very good. That's a very important distinction. And we're going to have to look at some of the sources and see if one svara or the other fits better to one case than the other case. What Maury pointed out is very important, right? On the surface, there is a similarity between the prescription glasses and the old family picture. Right, what do they have in common? That in both cases, I wouldn't get a lot selling them in the marketplace. So from that metric, it's a very minor damage. But in terms of why it's important to me, in a way that's different than everyone else, that is a difference. The glasses, it still boils down to a monetary consideration. I don't have any sentimental attachment to the glasses. I'm going to have to pay to replace them. And that's where the issue is. So there's a big disparity between what I'm going to have to pay to get new ones and what I would have gotten had I sold it in the shuk. So that becomes the issue, the difference between the value if I put it up for auction and the value of the replacement. That's going to be much more. So in the case of the glasses, that's the question. Which number is the key number? Although, one way or another, we have a Maisa Hezek here. It's not like the case with insurance or with Grama, or with Hezek Shein or Nicker. It's more clear than all those other cases that there is a liability. Right? It's just a question of how much liability. Is it a tiny liability because I can only sell it for a minimal amount to an optometrist who will recycle the parts and find some use for it? So the question is, how much liability, but that there should be liability, that is clear. With the picture, it becomes a little less clear, right? Because that picture has no value. Anybody can, nowadays especially, anybody can generate a picture off of their printer. But this picture has value that's unique to me and cannot be interpreted in monetary terms at all on the surface. So I think Judd had his... sorry, yeah.
Couldn't you sell the glasses to somebody else who needs the same prescription as you and get the same amount of money?
I'd have a very hard time finding that person. You know, in real life, try to do it, right? In real life, see how you have the issue also of the fluidity of the market. You know, that to find the person who is in the market for your exact prescription and that has been used by you already, right? They're always going to be better off just going to the doctor, and the same way you got yours from the doctor, so they'll be better off going to the doctor and getting one that's exactly for them. So you're going to have such a limited market, plus it's used, that you're not going to recover the same amount of money as you would get if you were trying to, as would cover what you would have to pay for a new one.
Yesterday we talked about Mazik can't tell you, like, can't pick which one he wants to pay versus the insurance liability versus just paying for the item at rent.
Yeah, we questioned that.
For this case, who then sets the price and who decides what to pay?
That's exactly the question. Right, so there's two questions we have to clarify. First of all, is there any chiyuv at all? Like if there's something, essentially a picture, right? A photograph would be basically impossible for you to sell in the marketplace because it has pretty much zero value. Right, a picture of your family, with all due respect, your family is wonderful, but to try to sell the picture in the marketplace, you know, as far as the value to anyone else, it's essentially zero value because they can generate a picture of anything else. So is there a chiyuv at all to pay for mazik something that cannot be sold, so it has zero value? That's one question. So first we have to figure out if there is a chiyuv at all. And if there is a chiyuv, how much is it? So should it be determined by the replacement cost? Or what if it's something like the picture where there is no replacement cost? It's not about the replacement, it'll be gone forever. So how do we assess that value to the owner? Just on the surface, by the way, we might as well fill this out here. Do you have any suggestion? Like if you had to put a value on a family picture or something like that that has no replacement possibility, how would you even start? How would you start trying to determine a value? Yeah?
This is a long shot, but at like one point, you can see that there should be like a SAR payment.
So, I'm sorry?
There should be like a SAR payment if you hurt someone.
So that is from Chavallah. It's hard to... Yeah, but it's hard to bring that into Nizkei Mammon because Nizkei Mammon don't have all the same qualities as Chavallah. So, and even there, it's a little trickier. But
Maybe that chakira that we brought about. Do you have to pay for the chisaron versus the hefsed?
Except that here, how would you measure either one?
Yeah, the concern would be the object. Maybe that would focus more on the sentimental aspect of it.
So, how would you assess it? How would you put a dollar value on it?
Wouldn't it be impossible to?
It might be, and if it's impossible, do you say you're off the hook?
So that's what I'm wondering. Is that would you say according to Rav Chaim that when it's sentimental value, you're just putter because you can never hit
it? So, is that the way to look at it? That essentially you're theoretically chayiv, but there's no way to assess the number. And therefore, you're putter for that reason?
Do we have any question for like saying, like, hey, you're putter since we don't know how to get you?
If it's impossible to pay.
Chai b'deshmai, I guess.
And then what? How do you figure that out? What? Chai what? B'deshmai?
Chai b'deshmai.
I mean, it's interesting. Once you say chai b'deshmai, which just seems a little bit of a cop out, you could basically say. I mean, the truth is, there is a path that way, theoretically. We don't know if this is the answer yet. But there is a path that way. You could say, what does chiyuv b'dei shamayim often mean? Like we saw with grama, right? That might mean that you have to settle with the victim. You have to ask him for mechila. And he can say, I'm not going to be mochel you without any attempt to fix this. You have to fix this. So then maybe it's going to be subject to a negotiation between the two.
So you can say it's chayiv midin after the melucha. He did something really bad. It's really mean to break something bad, so it's something really bad.
Right, so therefore, the chayiv rechek melucha means fix it?
You have a chayiv, and then you could say that...
I mean, you could go back to what you're saying, which is interesting, say that chayiv b'dei shamayim, which, you know, is an interesting path to pursue, because there is what to think about as far as that's concerned, because that gives us... It gives us a little bit of a model here, which is interesting because it's not the model that you're going to find in some of the forums that talk about it. So I think it's an interesting model to think about for a second, and because it could say, listen, all right, this guy can't get this in the shuk, can't sell this in the shuk, but clearly I did something bad to him. Clearly I'm inflicting suffering on this person. So if that's the case, I have a moral liability here. So chiyuv b'dei shamayim. So what does the moral liability mean? It means I have to seek his forgiveness. And as we've seen, sometimes it's legitimate for the victim to say, I'm only going to forgive you when you do something to fix this. So maybe it'll just be the subject of negotiation between the two. You know, how much do I need to be compensated in order to feel better about this, in order to feel... And clearly you have to have a Beis Din overseeing the process because it clearly could be abused. But it's not an impossible model here. It's an interesting thing to think about. Hi. Sorry.
Another somewhat stretch, but you put on the car, so maybe it's not so much of a stretch.
Okay.
But the Gemara in Tzadichet, where it talks about what, you know, I guess, what the Baal would assign as the value of the Ksuba, I guess, something would have happened, right? So I guess that you have a presence of someone assigning value to something.
Right, so then the question is, are there things, but then it's going to be pretty low value, by the way. Yeah, right? The question is there a way?
You would have paid if, you know, someone took it or something. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know.
Right, or you could say, and this is something we'll see, let's say, for example, let's say you tell this guy, say, you extort this guy, you say, I'm going to burn down your picture unless you pay me not to. How much would you pay me not to? It could be that, and that's a possible angle here, that maybe you assess how much would the owner of this item, to whom it is important, how much would he pay to prevent this from happening?
That sounds more like a Mahmoud's situation.
Okay.
With the case of Shaman over there, since you're really evaluating how much the person...
Right, so that could be a possible mahalach here. So, you have a question about that? So, yeah?
Could we apply the same thing we learned last week about sentimental value versus an item that's like one out of one?
So how would you want to apply it?
So you say that just as an item that's one out of one, that mm-hmm. has an inherent value, but if you destroy it, you can really replace it, but it has some sort of connection.
You say one out of one, meaning it's...
That, according to the client, that same thing, that if something's one out of one, you can never restore that object to where it was before. There's nothing like it. Same thing here with the sentimental value. There's nothing like it according to you.
Right. So, so therefore, what would this, and what would that be, though? So, what would the standard be to assess it?
Well, that's what I'm more wondering. Is that what?
Yeah. So, we still have to figure out a metric.
But I'm saying, do we have a set of dinam when there's only one out of one? There's only one item in the world, and then you could apply the same thing with sentimental value.
And how do you assess what it is?
I mean, that has. I guess that in that case has more of a book value. What it was worth before.
And then, but is that the same value? Because now the sentimental value changed it.
Yes.
Now, but if there's still such a thing where you say the book value, that might still be relevant, let's say, to the case of the glasses, right? To go to the value of what it cost on day one, even though now it's gone down, right? That's, again, the difference with the picture. The picture was never worth much on the shuk. It didn't change. It only became valuable to the owner because of its sentimental quality. Glasses... or something like that, had value on day one, but, and it had a purchase price on day one, it's just, it doesn't have a resale value. So it's easier when something has an initial value and a replacement value. So then we only have to figure out, is he chayiv or not? If he's chayiv, so then we don't know if he's chayiv the full replacement value, but at least we have a number to use.
Okay, but the same thing here, that the value is going to change when it doesn't exist.
Yeah, but then we don't have to. Then we don't go by that. We subtract that. Maybe we subtract whatever's left. I'll give you one other case, and we'll have to pick up with this tomorrow. Some of the key phrases you've already seen maybe today, and some of the makoros that will be relevant to trying to figure this out. I'll tell you one other case where sentimental value is incorporated by some poskim into halacha. Comes up in the context of Hashavas Aveda. When it comes to Hashavas Aveda, so if you learn Eilu Metzias, my son is learning Eilu Metzias now in school, so you see that there are many cases where one is theoretically putter from returning an item. In general, Hashavas Aveda, Aveda Halachos in general, is a balance between rights, because the one who lost an item has the right to get it returned when it's reasonable and possible. And when it's not possible and reasonable, so then the item should be the property of the finder. If the finder finds something and there's no chiv to return it, so then it's his right to keep it. So it becomes a balance of rights when is there a obligation to find the original owner and give it back to him, and when is that not considered reasonable or possible, and then is the right of the finder to keep it. So there are many, many cases. If you learn Hilchos Hashavas Aveda, you see there are many, many cases where technically the balance lands in favor of the finder, and that the circumstances are that the finder is able to keep it. But when you can identify the owner confidently, we still say that lifnim mishur sadin, he should give it back anyway. And this is not the time for a long discussion about it, but I should emphasize lifnim mishur sadin is the chiyuv. It doesn't mean, you know, if you choose to do something above and beyond, that's nice. But very often lifnim mishur sadin is the chiyuv. It means that even though on one level you're not obligated, but because of lifnim mishur sadin you are obligated. So there are various factors to determine when there is a lifnim mishuras hadin obligation and when there isn't. And one of the factors is if all other things are equal, but the person who lost the item is an ani, and the person who found the item is an usher, so then we sometimes say lifnim mishuras hadin, you should give it back to the guy who's going to be affected much more by losing it than the finder will be by finding it. So it's one of the elements that goes into lifnim mishuras hadin. So some contemporary poskim have written that when the item that was found has sentimental value to the one who lost it, so that also is like ani and usher. It's essentially a different application of ani and usher. So even if it's a very wealthy person who lost the item, and it's another wealthy person who found it, but the wealthy person who lost it is going to feel much greater anguish because of the sentimental importance of the item that was lost, so it could be he's considered an ani for that purpose, that even though he's wealthy, but he feels greater tsar, the same way a more needy individual will feel greater tsar in having lost the item, so that sentimental value makes the status as if it was an ani. So it's just another example of where sentimental value may fit into halacha. So tomorrow you'll see the rest of the makaros, and we'll try to continue this. I'll tell you some things to think about and to look for. Look for the concept of davar hagorem l'mamon k'mamon dami. We'll have to see how that fits in, and we'll have to see how concepts of garmi fit in. And we'll have to see how all this comes together. Hopefully we'll have some mahalach in this. All right, so I wish everyone a wonderful day. We'll see you, God willing, tomorrow. And stay warm.